Wrestling fans, there's a podcast you will want to add to your podcast playlist. Wrestling with the Willies, hosted by Josh and his brothers, and they discuss all things wrestling, like WWE Extreme Rules, WWE SummerSlam, and more. You'll get the results and their reactions on all the matches you want to know more about, as well as in-depth analysis, opinions, and fallout from the events on Raw and SmackDown. Wrestling with the Willies talk about all the wrestlers you know and follow, their matches, moves, losses, and their achievements. Add Wrestling with the Willies to your podcast playlist right now. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Amazon Podcast, Google Podcast, and your favorite podcast platform.
Welcome to Scream Creeps, the podcast where we delve into the darkest depths of horror cinema. I'm your host, Jeremy, and I'm here again with my brothers, Aaron and Josh. And today we're shining a spotlight on a film that sent chills down the spines of audiences and critics alike. Ranked as the 10th scariest movie according to Science back in 2020, The Visit takes us on a twisted journey into the unknown. Join us as we dissect the terror, unravel the mysteries, and explore what makes this spine-tingling thriller a must-watch for horror enthusiasts everywhere. So grab your popcorn, dim the lights, and prepare to be haunted by The Visit. So, with that being said, I'm going to start talking about the movie. Well, not really the movie, but the background of the movie. So, The Visit is a 2015 American found footage horror film that was written, co-produced, and directed by M. Night Shyamalan. And it stars Olivia DeJonge, Ed Oxenbould, Deanna Dunnigan, Peter McRobbie, and Catherine Hahn. The film centers around two young siblings, teenage girl Becca, that was played by Olivia DeJonge, and her younger brother Tyler, who was played by Ed Oxenbould, who go to stay with their estranged grandparents. During their stay, the siblings notice their grandparents behaving bizarrely, and they set out to find the truth behind the strange circumstances at the farmstead. The film was released in North America on September 11th, 2015, by Universal Pictures. It grossed $98.5 million worldwide on a budget of $5 million and received positive reviews from critics, with many calling it a return to form for Shyamalan's career. So with that, we'll go ahead and get started on the discussion. Josh, what did you think of the film? I don't know. Was this your first time watching it, or had you seen it before?
I saw it before. I don't remember. It was sometime, I think it was on the HBO or something, like way later. After the movie. It's been a while since I watched it. And I just remember, like, it was an okay movie. Like, seeing the trailer is pretty much, like, a lot of the movie is in the trailer. That's why I kind of just avoided it for a while. But then when I first watched it, it was like, I was just surprised, and I didn't realize that M. Night Shyamalan was the one who directed it.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Because I thought it was just a regular horror movie, right? Like, or especially found footage movies, because I'm not a huge fan of found footage movies. So usually I'll skip them. It's mostly because, like, movies like Cloverfield and Blair Witch and shit. But, like, I was not really interested in it. And then one day, I think it was just on the TV, like I had something on in the background and it happened to be that movie. And then I was like, oh, and so then I watched it from the beginning and I was pleasantly surprised just because it was different than I expected. Like, I felt like the whole movie kind of was like, I don't know. It definitely was one of his better movies, especially after the, I can't remember if the Avatar The Last Airbender was the last movie he did before this one. I think there might have been a movie before this one, before that one, or after Avatar. But
yeah, After Earth was the one before this one.
Dude, I forgot he even did that one. I still haven't watched that movie. Mostly because so many people... Yeah, I didn't realize he made that one either.
Yeah, but the Will Smith and Jaden Smith movie. Yeah, he made that one back in 2013.
They did two kind of stinkers, and then
An interesting part about that is he funded this movie by borrowing $5 million against his house.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, but he he wrote and directed this one, didn't he?
He directed, wrote, and produced it along with help from Jason Blum, because it's Blumhouse Productions.
Okay.
But
I noticed the things that he writes. That's to me. That's where he shines.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that he writes, it just feels good. But I'm not saying this is like the best film or anything like that. But because I mean, it's a great idea. But yeah, I don't think it hit any of the marks that I wanted it to hit. It wasn't really scary. It wasn't. But the story itself was a cool concept. So, was this little old lady menacing? No. Was she certifiably insane? Yes, but obviously the story tells that she legit is insane. So, I don't know. It was just kind of meh. Me.
Well, it's like the standard M. Night Shyamalan film, though. It kind of goes, and then there's an ending that reveals everything. Like Sixth Sense was like that. Yeah. Like you're supposed to pick up on stuff, and you pick up stuff throughout, but then it's a final payoff at near the end of the movie, and it's like
Thinking like, why did the during watching it, I'm just like, why did she cover the camera on the laptop and not the other camera? I just put two and two together. I was like, I didn't think they were going to be FaceTiming on their computer or anything like that, so I just didn't.
Especially it's kind of hard to do it on a cruise. I mean, if you pay the extra money, I assume, but like knowing that they were FaceTiming on a cruise, you know. I only say that because of experience, but
yep, they had Wi-Fi. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It had to have Wi-Fi
on board. Wi-Fi had it doesn't happen over intercoastal waters, you know. So
So
what about you, Jeremy? Did you even like this movie?
I did. I always have. It wasn't scary to me. It was more, like Josh said, creepy. Like that woman, especially when she projectile vomited at that part.
What the fuck? Walking through your puke like nobody's
And then like just the way she did shit to the camera sometimes, like near the end when they were, she yelled Yahtzee into the camera after eating the cookies really fast. Yeah. It's like she played the role brilliantly, man.
Yeah. I mean, eating the cookie rolls. Yeah.
Because it's like if anybody was certifiably insane, they would act like that. And that's again, it's like what we talked about before was that I like the ones where it's an accurate depiction of shit that would happen. Like someone that would be like that would do these things.
What acting is, right?
Yeah.
So she just played the role really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And that I was thinking about it too, is that the bedtime had to be 9:30 every evening. They never talked about it, but I bet you that's when they went to bed every night in the hospital. Don't leave your room, so it was ingrained in them. So, like, they're locked up basically at 9:30 every night or whatever. So, the dude was just, you could tell there was things early on they kind of alluded to when he just attacked the dude for looking at him, and stuff like that. But the kicker, you know, obviously you don't find out until later what the true pickup is. Like, it's not there. That was one of the best parts to me, was those aren't your grandparents.
Yeah, I remember, like, when I saw that shit, I was like, dude, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
Especially, you would be fucking freaked if you were in that situation. Like, you'd be seeing the grandpa, like, shitting himself and all that shit, and you're like, oh, that's not your grandparents. You're like, fuck, I need to get out of here, like, now.
Yeah, and like I was saying, you wouldn't know because you never saw your grandparents. Like, that's the whole crazy part about it, was that, you know, the mom had never seen the grandparents in so many years, but she would just send the kids off.
Yeah.
There's a lot of precautionary measures that would have been taken. They wouldn't have just sent them off.
Like, yeah, I mean,
you've never seen your grandparents before. Here's a picture of them.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
So to know you're going with the right people. So that was the one, if I would say there was any plot hole, it was that. Like, I don't know, as a parent, that's what I would have done. Like, if I had never seen, like, if I knew my kids had never seen their grandparents before, I would show them what my parents looked like. Mm-hmm. So they would know, like, when they showed up at the airport, they're going with the right people. But, I
couldn't imagine what that was like growing up as a child, not knowing what your grandparents even looked like because your mom doesn't talk.
I know. That's
like, what the fuck? Like, sure, you had an out with your parents or something like that, but you didn't talk to your children about, oh, this experience you had with your mom or your dad. And, oh, mommy, what does grandma look like? Oh, I don't have any pictures of grandma because she fucking hates me.
You don't hear about that until the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So it's like, that was that's the piece, I think, because they left that out till the end, that left a plot hole through the whole movie. Intentional, obviously, but it's like, for people that, well, even for people that don't have kids, they would still think the same thing. Like, what? They're just sending the kids off?
I wouldn't even knowing who they're. I wouldn't be okay with sending them on a plane or a car to.
Well, especially if you're
without dropping them off myself.
Well, especially, like, if you're going on a cruise where you know you're not going to have a lot of coverage. So there were many days they couldn't even contact their mom because she was on the cruise. So it was like, anyways, but overall, like, if that situation happened, it would probably go down exactly like that, except for that piece. I don't think it would have ever gotten to that point in real life. Like, they would have seen them and, wait, you're not my grandparents. That's what really would have happened. But if this exact scenario happened the way it did, that's it. This is probably exactly how it would have went down. Except I don't know if the ending, like, with...
Yeah, I don't think the ending would have happened. They would have probably
They would have ran away, probably.
So that was obviously the favorite part. But you want to know what my favorite part or my second favorite part was? I don't know why. Kind of gross.
Like, was it the part where he smeared Tyler with the diaper?
He's like, I thought he was like going to go throw it away, just like taunt him or something like that. But he turns back. I bet you that was an improv scene.
Yeah, like, I bet.
Puts in his face. I'm like, oh damn! How are you going to do that to him? Oh shit! Dang,
but it is funny that I
thought about his character, like, this was a growing moment for him because he had the freezing moment when he was in football and stuff like that, and then he had the spell on him when the old man, that, you know, that whole part, and then where he goes back to that moment in his head, and then it explodes out of him like an emotional waterfall.
Mm-hmm.
And just goes after this guy, smashes his head with the friggin' refrigerator door. That was number two for me. The shit part was the third favorite.
Yeah.
Four was her stabbing that old lady
with
a glass shard. She
Oh
man. You deserve that. You were gonna Hansel and Gretel her, put her in the oven.
I know.
You're gonna put her in the oven. I would have been like, what the No, I'm
and
not
that's,
getting in the oven all the way. Like,
what well, that's what I'm...
That shit.
That was the other part that I was like, I would be calling it into question right away. What do you mean crawl in the oven?
It was like an almost okay step, bro, moment where you get caught in the friggin' laundry.
Oh, my God, I'm so
stupid. You see her like, oh, can you get even further? And you see her tuck her knees inside like she's going to get deeper in the oven. She tucks her knees. Like, closing the door. When she closed the door on her, I would have mule kicked that fucking door off so hard.
Yeah.
And got up in her face. Like, what? And I'm like, Dana, what the fuck is wrong with you? You're gonna put me in the oven. But no. She's like, it's my grandma. She's super sweet. She's just old.
Yeah.
Like, come on. That's why I say this movie was just meh.
Yeah.
Man, I love.
I mean, I get it. Yeah,
I love a lot of your films. This was a miss for me. I don't know what the critics were saying. It's his claim to like he's on a comeback. He's on a comeback.
They Maybe say that trailer. A lot with his movies. They say that like where it's like
Lady in the Water got bad reviews, and I fucking loved that movie.
Yeah,
but I feel his return was split. If you've seen that movie,
I would say yeah.
No. I think his return was the one before that. What was it? Unbreakable.
This was the one. Unbreakable was one of his early ones.
Yeah,
that was right after Sixth Sense. Yeah, he did the Sixth Sense. Then he did Unbreakable. Then he did Signs. Then he did The Village. Then Lady in the Water, and then The Happening, The Last Airbender, After Earth, and then this one. Then after this one, he did
The Last Airbender and friggin' After Earth. Those were the two that were kind of
well. The Happening too was
That's when they started to go blip.
They're like yeah.
Okay,
but like
that was The Happening. He wrote
all
those films. He wrote, and then I don't think he obviously didn't write The Last Airbender.
Definitely didn't do that one, but he probably did a screenplay or an adapted screenplay.
Yeah, but I mean, you're adapting it from an anime that's friggin' going.
He wrote The Last Airbender, though.
He wrote it?
Yeah. He wrote that movie, yeah.
Wait, it was is it not based on the anime?
He wrote the movie, though. So, it was based on the animated.
A lot of people hated the film.
Yeah.
That's why
it was
even the screenplay love like, adapting from previous things. So it's
still
his creative.
It was based on book one, Water.
Yeah, so it's not his creative direction. So it's a little bit different than he's adapting it from that book. So he's just screenplaying what's there. I can't say anyone would direct that and be like, oh, it was amazing.
But The Happening, he wrote.
Yeah, that was the last one. And I don't even remember watching The Happening.
That was the Mark Wahlberg one.
That was the trees are killing me.
I didn't think that was bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't either.
A lot of people didn't like that one because it was the earth is the killer, essentially. So they're just like,
how could you not like that? Like, self-sustaining. Everything looks for homeostasis, so it's like, oh, got too many people on that. maybe I need to dial this back a little bit. It was a totally believable story, and it was creative. The way that it was the plants reacting to everyone around, and it was sending
well, I think it was kind of like a combination of that and probably how Mark Wahlberg did in it, maybe. Like a combination of both. But I mean, I don't know. I didn't find it to be bad.
Mark Wahlberg in almost every movie that he, and to me.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, so, he's mostly the same character a lot of
I was just going to say the same thing. That dude has almost been the same character in every movie he's been in.
Well, I don't want to say that. It's just his tone.
For the most part.
Yeah, but it's not saying his acting is bad, but he's Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
He's Mark Wahlberg. Yeah. Mark Wahlberg. The most diverse from that wasn't like how he is now is Renaissance Man.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of his earliest roles. But it was a very different character from the things that he plays now.
Well, the different character was his very first movie when he did Fear. That was his most diverse one.
I did not like that movie at all. I hated that movie when I first watched it. I was like, God, this movie's god awful. But I mean, it's mostly like I just didn't understand the.
But I mean, that's the movie that made him too. So
yeah, it's understandable because he acted his ass off in that movie. But personally, I just hated the movie or disliked it, I should say.
Well, and I say that Renaissance Man was his first movie. Fear wasn't. Renaissance Man was.
Really?
I thought
Fear was his first one.
I honestly really like that movie. So
yeah.
But
Renaissance Man came out in 94.
I don't remember ever watching that movie. I don't think. I mean, that's the Al Pacino movie, right?
Where no, that's the Danny DeVito one. When he played
he's in the military. He's playing.
Yeah,
he's an educator in the. They have to great.
Yeah, I don't think it.
He was a advertising executive, and he was teaching literature to the army recruits. So,
I don't know if I've ever watched it now.
But it was a while ago.
The name
but,
sounds familiar, but I just don't know.
But I remember Gregory Hines from that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Sergeant Cass. That's who I remember. There were a lot of people in that movie. Ed Begley Jr. was in it. Kadeem Hardison, for all those people listening that watched A Different World, he was in the movie.
Oh, okay. That's like I was trying to. I know I've heard the name, so I was like, "Hold on, what was he from again?"
Great.
But yeah.
But anyway, what we were getting or talking to before was the M. Night Shyamalan thing, like him, like coming back. I would agree with you if Split came after those two. Then, yeah,
Split was one of my favorite movies. And unless you really point out, or if you really, because Glass followed it.
Sorry.
Glass followed it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to you have to watch all of the movies to understand how that one falls into it. But that was a great movie because you don't realize.
It was a cool concept. That all the entire series of those, I thought they were great.
You don't realize I'm trying to get Elaine to watch it. It was one of my favorite movies that he's done, and I think it's because of what's his name's performance in it.
James McAvoy
was brilliant in that movie, playing that dude.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that he didn't get like an award for it or nothing. Was he even nominated? I don't think so.
No. I don't think so, but a lot of times these horror movies never get nominations. I think some of them should. Or what would be
considered Split as a horror movie now?
Yeah, it's a psychological horror thriller, is what it's called. Considered.
See, I understand thriller, but I don't know. I guess they consider thrillers in the horror genre. I guess.
But I guess when Split was coming out, I already knew it was part of the Unbreakable series. Like, I already knew that it was gonna be, that's an adversary for his character. So I knew, I didn't know it was going to be Glass that comes out, but I knew it was in the same realm. So I didn't consider it horror. I just considered it like the villain.
Or one of a villain, yeah.
But yeah, then you had the movie Old that came out. That was always also his. Yeah. And then Knock at the Cabin also he did last year, which... Oh.
I didn't know that he did Knock at the Cabin, too.
Which, too. I haven't watched that one yet, but I've heard good things about it.
I've always liked his writing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Knock at the Cabin one, that could be... Huh.
That could be one we talk about on here, because I planned on it when it came out, but that was in the middle of COVID. So it was I think it came out in the theaters and was on Peacock at the same time, or... not too far afterwards, so it was.
Yeah,
but
like Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Did you guys watch it?
I haven't seen Knock at the Cabin.
You haven't watched it. Oh, okay, all right, never mind. Yeah, no, it was pretty slick. It was
so.
It's an M. Night Shyamalan movie. All of his writing.
Shyamalan.
Pure, but it has really cool, unique features to it. It was
So one question I have for you guys is, we've been talking about the characters in the movie, but Olivia De Jong, does she look familiar to anybody?
No.
Not really. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the movie Elvis?
Mm-hmm. Oh, what, the new one?
Yeah.
The one that just came out, like, last year or something?
She's the one that played Priscilla Presley in it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Shit.
She grew up a little bit.
So,
I would have to watch it again.
I wonder if that was her.
So, I figured, I knew you had seen it, Josh, because you were going to review it for the website. That's why I was asking if she looked familiar to you. But yeah, I was surprised to see that was her myself. Because I guess eight years makes a difference when you're growing, I guess. Because she's 25 now, so back then she was 17 when she made this movie. Yeah. Or 16, 17.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Ed Oxenbould, the one that played the son, he was in Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. That's what he's really known for.
He was kind of like the lead dude.
And then him and Olivia starting another movie in 2016 called Better Watch Out. I think I've seen that on Netflix, like available on Netflix.
Sounds familiar.
It looks like it's around Christmas time or something, or revolves around Christmas time.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't. I know it sounds familiar. I just can't.
Well, like the cover, I think she's holding a knife and he's right behind her, so they might play brother and sister again. But for that, I'm gonna give the stats for this, since we go over this every podcast. And if you guys listen to the last one, I kind of mentioned that it almost seems like the results are off, and you'll see why in a second. But as is customary, we talk about the average resting heart rate. So in the study, the average resting heart rate for everybody in it was 65 beats per minute. The average movie heart rate for the visit was 79, which puts it, you know, obviously in a tie with The Ring from last week. Now, the highest spike, it says, for this movie in the results I'm reading was 100. And this is where I was like, if you guys recall, if you guys listened last time, The Ring highest spike was 107. So I don't know if they typed or if the result in here is wrong, like it's supposed to be higher than 100.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, it should have been at 11 versus 10, and The Ring should have been at 10.
Well, the average also is dependent on how many people had averages of over 100. So it would really depend. Like, let's say,
if there was more
let's
people,
say there's 100 people in it. Okay, the average heart rate is 70 something, but then in The Ring there was only five people that had 107. That was the top, but there was only five people, it wouldn't bring the average up.
I'm just looking at the results, and that's how it has structured throughout. Like, yeah. So if like at 77, right, we had four movies that the average resting heart rate was 77.
Uh-huh.
So Exorcist, its highest spike was 92. At 16, 28 days later, the highest spike was 95. At 15, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the highest spike was 98. And at 14, Halloween was at 101. So that's why it placed... Oh, so
it's just trending.
So, yeah, so like this, The Ring, based on what I'm looking at,
yeah,
The Ring should have been at number 10, and Visit should have been at 11.
So they just must have reversed.
Yeah, so that's what I was referring to. If you guys listened to the last episode, that it looked weird to me. But I don't know if I have anything else to say on The Visit. I think we talked more about M. Night Shyamalan in this one than we did the actual movie.
Because I think this was definitely it's a good M. Night Shyamalan movie, but like I would prefer other ones, but I would say check it out if you have watched the other ones too.
With that being said, coming up next week at number 9, it's going to be the movie The Descent. And then followed up by the week after, it'll be The Babadook. And then we'll have to think about what we're going to do at number 7, because number 7's The Conjuring 2. And for fans of the podcast, we actually already talked about that movie ages ago. I'll mention the stats for The Conjuring 2 and say we're going to, or something to that effect, because just to see that it, how it, you know, follows a path, but that one I don't remember what we were talking about doing for that one, but we'll decide what we're going to do at number 7.
I think
that might be what it was. Yeah, so we probably will talk about doing A Quiet Place 2, or maybe even Knock at the Cabin or something like that. But yeah. But since A Quiet Place 2 is on later studies, so for 2021, I think it pops at like 8 or 9. I think. We will probably do A Quiet Place too.
Good.
So
Babadook is one of the only ones that I haven't watched on here. I think there's only like a few more left.
There's a bunch in the top that I haven't watched actually. So
I know Sinister was.
I've been waiting to get to these top movies.
Yeah, I've seen about half, the other half I haven't. So in the top. In the top 10, actually, or top 9, what we're going further. I don't know if I've ever seen The Descent. I definitely have not seen The Babadook yet.
Oh, I definitely have watched The Descent. I own it. It's so really good. It's a really good horror movie.
So with that being said, that's what you can expect in the next episode, is The Descent followed by The Babadook. But I hope you guys we hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you guys enjoy what you're listening to on not only this podcast, but any of our other ones, or enjoy the content on our channel, and you haven't liked and subscribed to the channel yet, feel free. And hit that bell so you get notified when our new videos come out, because they're going to be coming out all the time. I mean, there's going to be we're going to probably get to the point where there's one every day almost, it seems like. Coming just out about, on the channel. So, but for all of us at the Heart of Geek, I'm Jeremy, and I'm here with my brothers Aaron and Josh, and we hope to see you in the next episode. Have a good one.
Love you. Bye.
Peace.